So welcome everyone, and Maureen, go ahead.
Okay, welcome. I'm Maureen Flannery from Chicago, and this is Marianne Dietzel. And we're eager to know who's joined us today, but first let me tell you a little bit about what you can expect from the next 2 days and our time together. Jordan's going to put up a slide, which will give us an introduction. And then you'll have time to look at that. We'll go on to the next slide.
Nope. So more, it sounds like someone might not be muted. If everyone other than Maureen just takes a look in their left-hand corner and make sure that their microphone icon is red with a dash through it. And if it's not, go ahead and click that and so you're muted. And then that way we're not hearing any kind of background noise. Okay, go ahead, Maureen.
Okay, next slide please, Jordan. Today, Marianne is going to tell us about the death of her daughter, Nina. And then she will share with us some practices which were so helpful to her in that difficult time in coming to grips with the reality of her daughter's death and in learning new ways in which she could love her and stay connected with her. And next, she will give us some practical information about reading for the dead, a practice which she did for many years and is continuing to do. And then after a brief discussion, she will read to us a passage from Laughing in the Waterfall, and we will have some prompts, and then we will be able to share. The next slide, please, Jordan. On Sunday, I will lead you through the process of honoring our loved ones with poetry. And don't be intimidated by that. If you think that you write better in prose, that's fine too. We're just going to continue to write. And since poetry is the only thing I know, that's how I term it. Next slide, please. And both days, we are going to follow these wonderful touchstones of confidentiality in the small groups, and then listening with respect when we share with each other what we have written. There will not be time for everyone to share, maybe close, but if you are sharing, please reserve what you share to 5 minutes or less so that more people will have time. And there may be some time tomorrow if we don't get through everyone's story today. And now, Jordan, if you would be so kind as to show us all those wonderful faces instead of the slides, we will go on to introduction. So I will begin by saying I am from Chicago, in the upstairs bedroom. And let's hear who is here and where you are from.
So it might be helpful. I will actually say your first name or the first name that's written on your screen, and that way we'll have some order here. So I'm Jordan and I'm coming in from Philmont, New York, and Marianne is next. Oh, but you're gonna have to remember to unmute yourself, speak, and then remute yourself. This is good practice for everyone.
Marianne Dietzel from St. Paul, Minnesota.
Lisa is next.
Lisa Stauffer from Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
Okay. We have Helen is next.
I'm Helen Walker from Brunswick, Maine.
Mary is next.
Hi, I'm Mary Thiem from Santa Barbara, California.
Then we have Meg. You can unmute yourself, Meg. Let me see if I can unmute you. Or we can go on to Anne and come back to Meg.
I'm Ann Collender, and I am from Portland, Oregon.
Thank you. Francis?
Hi, I'm Francis Quinn from Ontario, Canada.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and then once you've introduced yourself, you can mute yourself again. We're all getting practice here. Lydia?
I'm Lydia Reynolds, Reynolds-Royer, and I live in Windsor, Ontario.
And Bride? Hi, Bride. So you can unmute yourself and then, yeah.
Okay, thanks. I'm Brian McWilliam and I'm calling from Victoria, BC, originally from Massachusetts.
And Chelsea?
I'm Chelsea Niehaus, from Tucson, Arizona.
Patty?
Hi, I'm Patty Smith from Hope Valley, Rhode Island.
And Kendra.
Hi, good morning. My name is Kendra Barnett, and currently I'm in Santa Cruz, California, and I'm originally from the Northwest Territories in Canada. It's nice to see everyone.
And then we have somebody who just says user with wearing a blue vest. Yeah, if you hit your mute microphone button, there you go.
My name is Linda Helmink. I'm from Elmont, Michigan, about 2 hours northeast of Detroit.
Great. Thank you. And you can just click on that again and it mutes you and goes back to muted. And Monica?
Hi, yeah, I'm Monica Lights from San Francisco, California.
Great. And John?
Hi, I'm John Beck. I'm from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And a quick trick, when you're muted, if you touch the space bar and hold it down, that'll unmute you while you talk.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good trick. And Malia?
Malia Balmuth. I'm joining from Oberlin, Ohio.
Janice?
I'm Janice from Shasky from Yarmouth, Nova Scotia in Canada, originally from Winnipeg, Manitoba. I moved here in the fall time. So I'm really glad I can be on this video with you guys. Thank you.
Great. And Audrey.
Hi, I'm Audrey from New Orleans, Louisiana. Did that work?
That worked. Yeah, that's great. Who else has joined us here? We have Mary Jo.
Hi, I'm Mary Jo Oresti from Detroit, Michigan.
Great. And then we have someone calling in on the phone with a 415 number, 730. If you hit *6, you should be able to unmute yourself. Let's see if I can unmute you. There we go, unmute. So the 415 number?
Yeah,
there we can hear you now.
Okay, Jordan, I can barely hear you. Your volume is so low and my phone is turned all the way up.
Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself. Who you are and where you're calling
from. I'm Meg Lemon from San Francisco, California.
Okay, wonderful. Welcome. We'll try to all speak up. All right, is there anyone?
I'm going to give.
Is there anyone who didn't introduce themselves and say where they're calling in or where they're dialing in from? Did we get everybody?
We don't know if Meg is.
Yes, right. That's right. Meg, it looks like you might not have audio. I just see video with you. Can you try again, Meg? Yeah, it looks like Meg just doesn't have, maybe her microphone's not working or something. Meg, can you type in to the chat and let us know where you are? She's working on that. Okay, anyone else that I might have missed? I know we have folks still just kind of joining in. Okay, so it looks like there's 23 of us, which is a nice size group. So that's... that's good. Okay. Maureen, back to you, I think.
I think it's to me at this point.
Okay, good. Marianne, yes. Yeah.
I will be with you for the rest of today, but Maureen will be guiding us in our writing tomorrow. So you'll see plenty of both of us. It was nice to get to know you just a little bit. And we hope that we can do that more through the workshop when you're sharing your writing or your stories. We know that each of you has most likely come with somebody you are holding close to your heart, who has crossed the threshold recently or not so recently. First thing, we will say a verse together to connect with our beloved, who are no longer in a physical body, but our soul in the embrace of spirit. So this verse expresses the longing of our heart to be near to them in our thinking, feeling, and willing. So since we are all mute, that's good. I would like to encourage you all to say this verse. And Jordan will put up the slide that has the verse on it. I will see that, won't I, Jordan? Yes, good. So there it is. So read together with me. May love of hearts reach out to love of souls. May warmth of love ray out to spirit light. Even so, would we draw near to you, thinking with you thoughts of spirit,
feeling in you the love of worlds, consciously at one
with.
And so we will hold these loved ones with us as we work together. A little bit of my story. My daughter Nina and her friend Kirsten were killed in a car accident in Harlemville, New York in 1996. They were attending the Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School in the 11th and 12th grade. Kirsten's mother was visiting at the time and was also in the accident, and she actually was airlifted to the Albany Medical Center while the girls died right away. We were back in Minnesota, so as soon as we could, we came to New York and we stayed with our friends, Laura and Stu Summer. There was another family that hosted a wake for the girls in their home. Next slide. This book is a book that I've held very close to my heart from the very beginning. It was like in the first 3 days, Laura handed this book to me. Someone had given it to her to pass on to me. Karen von Schilling also lost a daughter, so she was speaking of her experience and shared some very simple practices. First is this verse by Steiner. I did find this later in the book, Staying Connected, but in the early days, it was so important to me to feel that I was still so intimately connected with her, with her destiny, which was also my destiny, and that we were all, both and all of us were held, both in this world and the other world. So I'll read this verse. Divine in my soul, to you I shall give space in the conscious part of my being. You bind me to everything that the power of destiny has brought to me. You never sever me from that which you have given me to love. Your spirit watches over what is mine because it is also yours. Thus, I shall wake with you, through you, in you. What you have concluded with what is yours, I will be strong enough to accept that it be wisdom. God's wisdom doth order the world. It orders also me. In it I will live. God's love doth warm the world. It warmeth also me. In it I will breathe. God's strength doth bear the world. It beareth also me. In it I will think. Next slide, please. Karen von Schilling also told me not to forget my daughter, and that being only 18, she was still very close to this world and also suffering from having been taken away from the life that she loved. She also gave this is just the beginning of a poem by Maria Ryman. My eyes be unto you, beloved soul, as windows, that through them you may see the earthly beauty. My ears be unto you, beloved soul, as doorways, that through them in hearing you may enter the ether's weaving realm. So I could help Nina by remembering her life story, woven together with love and gratitude. But I could also send to her senses from the, or experiences in the physical world, be they olfactory, auditory, or visual. So if I was enjoying a beautiful concert, I could send that to her. If I was looking at a beautiful painting or beautiful scenery or smelling a rose, all those kinds of sensory experiences, I could first lovingly think of her and then send these experiences to her. That was also very helpful. Next slide. The other book that I was given in those first few days was The Uprising in Dying, which was edited by Christy Barnes, who is a poet and teacher who lived very near the school in Harlemville and actually knew Nina and Kirsten and came to the wake for them and wrote poems about each of the girls. It is a collection of verses and poems from various people and some extracts from Steiner's work. And in those early days, it was very helpful also to have these extracts that were very pithy, like the moment of death seen through the eyes of the one who has just died. Because in the early days, you don't necessarily have the concentration or energy to read through a Steiner lecture. So to have really the meaningful passages highlighted was very helpful. Then there was also this verse, and I did never find this verse anywhere else, but it speaks from the perspective of the one who has died. In radiant light, 'tis there I feel the power of life, for death has wakened me from sleep, from spirit sleep. Oh, I shall be and do from out me what radiant power within me shines. This was very comforting to me, and I heard it as if Nina was speaking it to me. Next slide. Back in Minnesota, on New Year's Eve, and the girls, by the way, died on November 29th, so a little over a month after that, some friends gathered with us on New Year's Eve, and I said, maybe we should start a reading for the dead group. Well, I had sort of heard about this somewhere, being, you know, involved in anthroposophy for a while, but all of a sudden, it was very important to me. I was lucky to have a few friends who joined me in this endeavor, and so we met, and they also joined my husband. Dennis was able to come to that, and Kirsten's mother, Linda, when she was recovered from the accident, she also was a part of this. We ended up meeting weekly for 5 years, and then I continued to do that on my own. Next slide. So what did this group look like? Well, we met every Tuesday morning at the same time in the same place in one of the person's house. We started by making tea, and we all sat down with our teacups in a circle. We started by reading the verse, which I shared with you this morning, followed by a period of silence when we each said the name of our loved one or ones who we wanted to read to. And we did that inwardly. Then we began to read. And one person would read several paragraphs or a page or more, then pass it on to the next one. We did stop to comment or, you know, have a little conversation around what we were reading. And we would go around the circle until we were done with the reading. Then we would have a period of silence again to remember those we had been reading for and close with the verse. So this was a mirroring form, which reflects the journey between death and rebirth, how you go through the planetary spheres into the realm of the zodiac. And then as you're coming back to the earthly realm, you're going through those planetary spheres in reverse order until you come back to birth again. So how is this different from any other study of a book or something? It's different because we were really reading with the intention of sending the thoughts to our loved ones. So to this end, we read slowly. We read by emphasizing the verbs. And those are two of the things that sort of reflect the difference in the realm in which the dead are living. And we also would pause often so that we could enliven the thoughts which we've read about or make them our own and send them on to our loved ones. Next slide. Besides sending our enlivened thoughts to those who have died, it is important how we name the souls who are reading, we are reading for, which is a key for being of service to them. We say the name inwardly, but along with the name, we bring up an image or an image of them or a memory of them filled with all of our love and send that to them. And that becomes like art for them. So for me, I always think of Nina when she was going to high school, when she lived still with us. When she came home from getting off of the bus in the evenings and she came in the front door with her backpack on her back and her viola in her hand, and she'd be setting that down and coming in and saying, "Hi, Mama." So that's what I send to her again and again as I read to her. So ever again, bringing forth the memory image of our images of our dead when we read to them creates a community of the dead that is there waiting for us when we begin. This is a blessing for us. Next slide. I thought I would give you an idea of things that we have read together as a group and some that I've just done myself, but note that we began by reading Parsifal and Faust, and the speech of the Grail was about the Parsifal story. These are pieces of literature that Nina and Kirsten would have still read in the 11th or 12th grade, but they hadn't gotten to them yet, so we thought that would be meaningful to read that to them. Next slide. So what does it look like when I read to the dead on my own? I try to do this at a regular time and day of the week, and I use the same form. I read silently, but you could read out loud as well. I read to a whole list of souls who have crossed the threshold, but you can also read to just one. I tend to not try to read a whole chapter, but more just a shorter section. And I find if I've really made those thoughts my own, that it really then stays with me for the rest of the day. So it's a wonderful thing for me as well as those who have died. In the early days, it was so important to have this group with supportive friends there and to have something that I could still do for my child that was just such a loss in my life that she was no longer there. So this is what I just longed to do, to somehow nurture her where she was in the spiritual world. This has changed over the years, that she really has become for me a spiritual being, no longer just the child that I have lost. Next slide. And I believe the next slide is that this would be a good time if anyone has a question or a comment about reading for the dead, or even an experience to share if you have had one. So Jordan will manage seeing who would like to speak and letting you do that.
All right, Kendra, go ahead.
Hi, thank you, good morning. Thank you so much for sharing. I had to jump up and get my tissues. I just wanted to share really quickly. When I was 18, that's when I moved to the United States from Canada, and I attended a youth anthroposophical conference in Mount Madonna in California, and that's when I met Nancy Poor and Linda Burke, and that's when my destiny moment happened in my life. And I had not heard of threshold work out in the world, so I'd always felt all these connections, and I was new to anthroposophy at 18, and now 25 years later, or 20 somewhat years later, here I am, and finally meeting you, because your story has really touched me all these years. And so I just wanted to let you know how grateful I am to see your face and to hear your words, and to honor your process and how you have inspired my life. And now I also am, I mean, I am a Waldorf educator now, an anthroposophist, and but I'm also a home funeral guide and a end-of-life doula in my community. And I work with families in perinatal loss. So thank you. It is so amazing to finally connect with you.
Thank you so much, Kendra. It is amazing to hear that story. I think those times in that first year after the girls died, there were these different, there was one in Ann Arbor too, where a lot of the youth were present and were able to connect with that story. Yes, thank you so much. And you're doing so many of the same things that I do with my life. Thank you. Anyone else?
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. I thought I read in Staying Connected that it was important to read out loud to the dead. Could you clarify, is it okay, you know, or how does that work with their senses?
I don't remember reading that, which doesn't mean that I didn't just miss it. Mm-hmm. But my understanding is that they are hearing our thoughts. So it's when we make the thoughts our own that they are hearing us. Maybe someone else has an experience or a thought about that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. If no one else has a burning question, I think we will go on to the next slide and hope that we get some time in for writing. So you can all hear me, right? This is the memoir I wrote the third year after Nina died, and it was a part of my grieving process. I wrote for the first time when I visited Nina's room where she had lived in Harlemville, and I slept in her bed, and it was such a powerful experience that I wrote my first poem to Nina at that time. And in the following weeks, months, and years, I would write sporadically in my journal. That became sort of the biography of my grief process. And then when I did sit down to actually write the book that was writing itself in my head, I could go back to those writings and then build up the pictures from whence those writings came. So it was very helpful. I also, that first year during the Holy Nights, I recorded the dreams I had. That was also an enlightening thing to do. And it was 3 years later during the Holy Nights that our family stayed at Camp Hill Village, Minnesota during the Holy Nights. They had gatherings in some of those evenings and had the theme of thresholds that people were sharing about. And that is when I began thinking about my experience in the waterfall. If any of you read the excerpt that I put in the resources for this group, that experience of standing on the edge of an unknown place and summoning up the courage to go in not knowing what was going to be there for you can then be such an opening and bring so much joy, which standing under the waterfall did for me, my husband and my son. So that was the story that I wanted to tell, why I wanted to write the memoir. What was writing in my head was, first of all, the title. I had that from the very beginning. But I wanted to share this experience that you can experience the devastation of grief and at the same time be open to joy and wonder. So I'm going to read, next slide please, a section to you from my book. And it is called Numinous. It was sad to reduce Nina's room to boxes and duffel bags. I thought it would also be sad for the Frischkoffs, who's the family she lived with, to have nothing left but a room that looked just like it did before Nina had lived there. So I left her beautiful India bedspread canopy above her bed, even though it didn't quite match the bedding. It so represented her ability to transform a functional space into something beautiful. In this strange reality at the threshold, the mundane became sacred. I took home the Queen Helene deodorant, Kiss My Face Honey Calendula Moisturizing Cream, and Jason shampoo that were Nina's. She and I had bought new supplies of these items for her trip. Using them on my own body each morning became a ritual for me. Nina became more and more a part of me as I applied layer after layer, day by day. The hand lotion and deodorant lasted an amazingly long time. It was more than a year later that I squeezed out the last drop. What was I to do then? How could I replace them? This was the struggle. The door to the threshold gradually closes as this monster called time comes between you and the event. And then the mundane must become mundane again. The first time we revisited Harlemville in June of 1997, Nina's bedspread canopy was still above the bed in her room at the Frischkoffs. The second time we returned to Harlemville in June of 1998, the bedspread was gone. The same thing had happened for Bruce and Karen. Life had become normal again. And physical mementos no longer had the same power. A bedroom should look like a coordinated unit, not a patchwork of mementos. The power of the objects became disconnected from the things themselves. The power became internalized. Willingly or unwillingly, it seethed within, waiting to be released. Next slide. So now I invite you to think of an object or a piece of clothing that belonged to your loved one and just start describing it and what it meant to your beloved, and then just see what comes of that experience for you and what meaning it has for you. So if you don't feel connected to that prompt or can't think of something, you could also write about an experience you have had of feeling the presence of a beloved after their death. So I hope you all have access to a pen and paper, because this is your chance to write. And we will take 10 minutes to do this. And then I will come on and let you know that we will all come back and some of you will share what you have written. So we will begin that now. dear friends, if you can please start to bring your writing to a conclusion. We'll give you a minute or two more, and then we'll all come together again. The time has come to put your pens down and come to be together as a group again. So we hope there will be two or three of you who might like to share what you have written or share something. So please raise your hand if you would like to do that so we know. I see Mary Jo. Mary Jo, would you like to share? Unmute yourself.
Hi.
Oh, good. Great. Thank you.
Regarding my mother, who, although she died many years ago, there's just these waves of feeling presence and connection. And I wrote about an object. Just an inexpensive, broken ceramic angel holding a candle. It stood on the windowsill by the front door, facing out. It was somewhat haphazardly placed by my mother, and it had the responsibility to ward off intruders. Now, mind you, this is a 5-inch cherub without wings and a face so sweet it could be called a doll. But like I said, it was haphazardly placed. That's because other things were too important and needed to be done. And guarding the house was not primary. My mother worked for fair housing, voting rights, racial and religious harmony. Therefore, things were as they should be. But there was also concerts and dancing and bringing dinner to Father Kern. I think I get it now. Choices are made every minute. The angel sits now on my kitchen windowsill, facing me.
Thank you so much. That just expresses so much about you and about your mother and that connection and the angel that we all have waiting patiently for us.
Well, thank you for bringing this. It was amazing how it just kind of flowed after that preparation that you had.
Oh, good. Good. Thank you.
I'm going to mute now.
Okay. Is there someone else who would like to share? Let me know, because I'm not sure I'm seeing everyone. Oh, there, Bride. Yes?
Hi.
Okay. Hi, Bride.
Thanks. So this is from the experience of losing a boyfriend when I was 12 and he was 13. And part of me still feels like I'm 12, so bear with me. And he was hit by a train on his way to school with his backpack and all his things in it. So this is something that was in his backpack that I found on the tracks. I kept them. The pieces of deodorant I found on the tracks. White gooiness mixed with fragments of broken black plastic that was once the container of the whole. It was the smell of Axe you carried that now, when I closed my eyes, brought you back. How powerful is smell, even chemical smell, to envelop memory, feeling, days spent together in the sun. Were they holy to me then? I felt like I couldn't let go. I kept them till they changed color and smell. I wish I knew how to let you fly. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bride. It is just amazing the impact these deaths of young people can have over many, many years. And interesting that you brought up deodorant just like I did.
Well, it came to me when you brought it.
Yeah, yeah.
I had forgotten.
Yeah. And that was how many years ago?
16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. I've recently gone through other things of Nina's that were so insignificant, but you just don't know what to do with them.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like you expressed. And you have to do something sometime.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, very, very nice sharing that. It's just so much what I was talking about in this, with this word numinous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
All right. If some one other person wants to share, maybe we could take a little bit of time. Otherwise, we'll move on to a second prompt. Is there anyone just dying to share?
Yeah, Marianne, it's Janice calling.
Oh, okay, Janice.
I'll get rid of my camera. I mean, I'll put my camera on. I had to unmute. I had to not use my video because I've been crying all week. My dog of 15 and a half years crossed over on Monday. His name was Sam. And I wrote about his, I don't know if you can see it, I wrote about his red jacket. He was a Shih Tzu. He was 15 and a half and his fur wasn't as good and all kinds of things. It's called his red jacket. Black fur collar, often pinned back. He knew it was time to go out, that it was cold out, or even better still, that it might be snowing out. We moved from Winnipeg to the East Coast, and in Manitoba, he was used to having snow all winter, whereas here the snow would come and then it would melt in 2 days and he'd have to wait for the snow to come back. With the jacket on his back, I would point him in the right direction and off he would go, front door or the deck. If it had snowed, the back deck was his preferred place. Halfway out the door, he would start eating the snow. I would have to give him a nudge so I could close the door. Sometimes he needed more of a push. He often returned to the door with his face covered in snow, having filled up, now ready for his treat, sweet potatoes or rice, and then his favorite raisin bread toast towards the end. Several times, sometimes we would go shopping. Canadian Tire was his favorite place. Up and down the aisles, he wouldn't see, but he sure could smell. Sometimes stopping in the middle, wanting to turn back. That was okay if I wasn't going on my way to pick something off the shelf. Sometimes we had tug of war. Who would win, him or me? Sometimes it was a tie. Sometimes I would let him win. And then I would just slowly direct him back to where I wanted to go. He went slow. You never knew when he would suddenly stop. A smell touched his nose. He needed time to sniff it out. Sometimes I would get impatient. He knew his job was to teach me to go slow. He gave my life a rhythm, a routine, up for his first pee, then in for his meds and his eye drops. The pills were put in a sweet potato, hidden in the smell of his favorite treat. The eye ointment changed to eye drops was usually not a problem until near the end, when suddenly he had pain when I tried to open his eyes. He fought and then he cried. It was this pain that told me it was time for me to let him go. His mind wasn't working. He would walk in circles at times, pacing and not knowing why. We had reached the end of the road for his journey in his physical body. As we listened to the music on the way to the vet, get his eyes checked out, I suddenly knew from the depth of my heart it was time for me to let him go. And it's been very hard. And, you know, being a pet, it's sort of like, it's like he was the love of my life for so long. And so, you know, I was hesitant even about sharing that it was about my dog, but it's my, he was my pal. He was my dog. So thank you for listening and letting me share.
Thank you, Janice. It is such a recent story. I'm glad that you had a chance to tell us about this faithful companion of yours who you've now lost. So I wish you well as you find your new life without him.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. I'm gonna hide my face again because
okay.
All right.
That is, I just want to hear everybody's writing and we don't have time today. We'll move on to the second prompt just so we can, this can get you going, you know, maybe you can keep on writing after this workshop. So this writing happens this spring, thank you, the spring after Nina died. April turned to May and spring arrived in Minnesota. With a new season came new layers of grief. I asked myself many times if I would have done anything different had I known that our time with Nina would be so short. I wondered why so many things seemed important when in the end they didn't matter at all. For example, I remembered how Dennis and I struggled to get her to learn word processing, keyboarding correctly, since she would be using the computer in high school and college and her whole life. She hadn't learned to type as part of her Waldorf education, so we brought her a program to learn it on her own. The Mavis Beacon program was a series of lessons that required regular practice sessions. We had to remind her and prod her repeatedly, and Nina did not go down the basement stairs to the computer with joy in her step. In the end, what did it matter if she only typed 20 words per minute with the hunt and peck method? What did it matter if Nina learned a foreign language or got a job or had a high grade point average? What did it matter if she watched television or not, or knew how to make a white sauce, knit socks, or print in calligraphy? Our personal and society values came into question when life itself seemed so fragile. This journal entry expressed this dilemma and my conclusion. Senseless it is to have raised a child only to have her taken from us before the task had its fulfillment. Wisdom it was that we did not know the master plan, for how could we have raised a child? Knowing how the task would be fulfilled, we raised her as best we could, for she was ours to love and nurture, regardless of the outcome. Next slide. So the invitation this time is think about your own grief at the time of a change of seasons. We're in that time now. Yes, just write about how you feel or how in relation to your loved one. another 1 or 2 minutes now for you to finish up what you're writing. Ding dong, time to come back together. Thank you. All right, we have 10 more minutes to be together, so we should be able to hear from a few of you again. So please let us know if you would like to share. Oh, there. Chelsea.
Okay.
Chelsea, yes.
All right. So I was only able to write just a short little bit, but to give you kind of a background, my husband died in 2018, and he was in Syria at the time. He had gone as a volunteer with a Kurdish group, and he died in January. We were not notified. We spent like 3 weeks through February trying to find out what happened, and we were not given official word till mid-March. So there was this big change of seasons, and his body was not actually repatriated to the United States until the end of May. So there was a very significant change of seasons through that process, and it started in the cold in February. And so this is what I wrote. It says, cold will forever be a part of grief for me. The memories of phone calls and tears and cold feet. As spring slowly crept in and things warmed up, the pain would begin to subside and make the business of planning for your return and memorial service easier. But I will never forgive the cold for my grief. So that whole change of seasons was just a huge, and it was such a long drawn out process. It was a huge part of our grief.
Thank you, Chelsea. It feels like that's very, very recent. So you're very brave to come to this workshop, and yeah, thank you for sharing those feelings. Anyone else? Okay, Francis. Francis, unmute. There you go.
Maybe I can't.
Okay. We'll give you a moment. We'll give you a moment.
Well, I'll cry with you.
It's about my mother. She died 25 years ago in May. She loved bluebirds. And bluebirds always come to nest in the spring. When she died, we had the funeral. And after the service was finished, on the way out of the church, it was a nice day. It was breezy, but it was nice. And the windows were open in the church. And as her casket was being taken out, these birds started to sing. Even after the funeral, people asked me, "Did you hear the birds?" So for my sisters and myself, the bluebirds, when they return in the spring, really takes us back to our mother. It's quite interesting how the birds just really did just all of a sudden sing as the casket was being pulled out.
That is really beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for hanging in there and sharing that with us. Yeah, it's amazing how nature responds to a loved one dying. They come to us and remind us and help us remember. Anyone else want to share? Just speak up if I don't see you raising your hand. And there are quite a few people who I don't see pictures for. I don't know if they've left already or what, but is there anyone else who would like to share? It can be from the previous prompt. Oh, there's Helen. Okay, good. We got a few people.
Okay. I wrote this just right now, being inspired by what's going on right now. I called it Honoring Our Tears. Great. Do these tears that well up from a great sea fill the pools of your eyes so full that they must spill over? Purify you like this candle flame, blue, then gold, then vapor, joining you as one breathing.
Mm. Is that it?
That's it.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a good thought. I appreciate that. Anne, did you want to share too? Anne?
There. Hi. I had to unmute myself.
Yes.
it seems to, this is the theme of this, is about breathing also. I'll just read what I wrote. My personal grief at this time of change of seasons has been what they call anticipatory. I know my loved one, my sister, coming to the end of this earth walk, is coming to the end of this earth walk. The time is growing close. Grieving has come in stages, from first knowledge of her illness, learning about it, what it might look like, how it might feel, as she walked this journey, walking with her, hoping, then letting go again and again over 2 years, and now acceptance and releasing so that she can fly when the time comes. Thankful for the blessing of the time to reconnect and reaffirm our relationship. The angel is moving at the time of outbreath. Spring and summer, when the earth breathes out its soul into the cosmos. And so she may move through the portal on this great outbreath, carried along like a butterfly, lifted and sailing.
Thank you very much, Anne. That's beautiful that you can accompany her in that way. So important. Let's see, very good. I think we're right at 12:15 in Central Time. So I think it's time for us to move on to a break probably we have before the next thing. Jordan, do you have any instructions for us?
Yeah, so it looks like we have 30 minutes here where we can stretch our legs and maybe get out into nature. And then we'll be back in the main room, which was the link, the very first link where we were all together. We'll be back there at 1:45 Eastern time. So that's in 30 minutes.
You know, I did have a closing thought that I forgot about. When we buried Nina's ashes in the spring following her death, we had them buried at Camp Hill Village where we lived for some years while she was growing up. As we were approaching that, I started thinking of her life as a fairy tale. Hans Christian Andersen said, everyone's life is a fairy tale written by the hand of God or the fingers of God. So that's just my parting thought to you as another prompt for writing. Maybe you can think about your loved one's life in a different genre of a story. And it could be a myth, a legend, a mystery, a romance, whatever it is. So that's just a thought as we leave, and we will look forward to seeing you again tomorrow. Thank you so much, you all for coming. Maureen.
May I just say briefly, thank you for the wonderful sharing. It is so validating of Marianne's story and all of your stories. And since we have invited our loved ones from across the threshold to come here with us in this session, we want to remember to take them back into our hearts and into our sleep and keep them with us and away from the technology and into our hearts where they belong. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Maureen, for remembering that.
See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
You're welcome.